the Buckmaster Show. It is Thursday, October the 27th, 2011, and I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KVOI AM 1030, known as The Voice, and also known as Southern Arizona's most powerful news talk station. It is the home of the Buckmaster Show. And a big shout out to our simulcast partners carrying the show, KJAA AM 1240 in Globe, our friends up in Gila County, and then in Cochise County, it's KAPR AM 930 in Douglas. The Buckmaster Show is always on the World Wide Web. Check out our website. It's buckmastershow.com. We are proud of the site. I think you'll enjoy it. Take a look at it. We have live streaming of the show at buckmastershow.com, along with an archive of our previous programs that you can listen to anytime, 24/7. And speaking of 24/7 listening, the Buckmaster Show is also heard at TucsonSentinel.com. The Sentinel is Southern Arizona's online news service. We are live Monday through Friday from noon to 1. Great lineup of guests today. We'll begin with a newsmaker interview with the director of the University of Arizona-based National Institute for Civil Discourse. At about 20 minutes past noon, Tom Harvey will be along. Mr. Harvey will talk about his very popular blog site, known as TheEconomyGuy.com. 30 minutes past the hour, Wendell Long joins us. He's CEO of the Soul Casinos Group. He'll break down the new gaming numbers. Then we'll close out the show with one of America's top breast cancer researchers who has some fascinating new research about quality of life and breast cancer. We encourage you to be part of the conversation. Join us on the Buckmaster Show live line 790-2040 or toll free from anywhere in North America 1-866-725-5467. You can also email questions at buckmastershow.com or submit them using the Buckmaster Show Facebook page. Well, within hours, actually within days after the dark hours of that horrific January 8th shooting here in Tucson, the Institute for Civil Discourse at the University of Arizona was born. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is Brent Millward, director of the National Institute for Civil Discourse, and he is also head of the School of Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona. Brent, it is good to see you again. You've been a busy guy.
I have, Bill, and thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Give us an update. Where is the Institute right now about 9 months into the whole process?
I think about 9 months in, we are really doing exceptionally well. We've got two tremendous chairs. We have President George Herbert Walker Bush and President Bill Clinton as our national chairs. We have Justice Sandra Day O'Connor and Tom Daschle, former Senate Majority Leader, as our co-chairs, with many other luminaries on the board, Colin Powell, Madeleine Albright, Katie Couric, Greta Van Susteren, and many others. And we just finished our first meeting of our board and selected advisors in Washington. We were hosted, it was a private meeting at the United States Supreme Court. Chief Justice Roberts hosted us there, and it was just an amazing event. We have also gotten to the point where we're starting to, we started out as an open source institute with a little over, I think we have 1.25 employees, with many volunteers who were contributing immense amounts of their time to this. And now we've had enough donations coming in from a variety of places so that we're in the process of staffing up and actually looking for an executive director so I can get back to my day job as director of the school.
At the University of Arizona. This obviously has hit a chord. It resonates with a lot of people. And why do you think that is the case, Brent?
I think many people in this country are absolutely sick of the type of politics that we have. And I think while you have polarization on both the left and the right, even people who are very passionate about politics don't like what they see. And many people have called us and volunteered because they want a different form of politics. They want a robust politics. They don't want necessarily moderation, but they want people who have ideas to engage those ideas and honestly and vigorously debate them so that instead of sound bites and scorched earth ads that vilify people, we really want to get to the matter and try to solve some of the critical problems we face.
Brent, the knock on the National Institute for Civil Discourse, some commentators and others have said it's an affront to our First Amendment right of free speech. But you're not really trying to be the civility police, are you?
No, I realize that we're not. That some people think we are the civility police. I could not be more adamant in saying that we are not that. And what we really are is we want to be advocates using our First Amendment rights to advocate for a different form of politics, for one that is robust and engages people and tries to bring people together so that at the end of the day there are critical problems that can't be solved any other way but figuring out ways that reasonable people who have a lot of differences can find ways to address our problems.
Fred Duvall had an interesting op-ed piece recently in the Arizona Republic, Civil Discourse to a More Decent Civic Culture. And, of course, Mr. Duvall, Arizona Board of Regents, head of the Board of Regents, was really instrumental in creating the Institute after President Obama gave his very moving speech at McHale Center. I believe Fred and some others were having dinner after the speech at the Arizona Inn, and they felt something really had to be done, and that was really, I guess, how this was all born.
That's exactly how it was born. Fred Duvall has been absolutely instrumental. It was his idea. He was the one who, after the shootings, after President Obama gave his speech here at the University of Arizona in McHale, was able to reach out to people all over the country and get Mark Kelly and many others to try and create a board that is second to none. I mean, one of the things that is very interesting is that we aren't alone. We're a very small institute in Tucson, Arizona, with a national mandate, essentially a presidential institute. But there are over 150 organizations around the country who are working in this same space with us. And so they've been calling us. We've been meeting with them. We will be holding a meeting in Washington, D.C. before too long with many of these groups to try and figure out how we can work together more cooperatively.
Why was the Institute located at the University of Arizona? Was it felt that there needed to be an academic anchor to this?
I think that's one of the things that we have as a huge advantage. We have a research director in Robin Stryker, who's really an eminent professor in the sociology department. After this Institute was created, she pulled together a number of really terrific researchers here at the university to do research on everything that we know about negative advertising, political polarization, the role of incivility in social media. And if you take a look at our website, nicd.arizona.edu, you'll see a synopsis of all the research that's been done, as well as the full report on everything that we know. And some of the things are a little counterintuitive. For example, people think negative advertising always works. Certainly many people in campaigns do. Turns out it really doesn't. That as long as the negative advertising is to the point and draws sharp comparisons between the individual who's running and their opponent, it tends to work. But vilification and really just mudslinging doesn't seem to work very well.
So there is the feeling that this is something that we have to accept as part of the political discourse. But you're saying, and others who agree with you, that really we don't need to accept that.
Well, I think what we're saying, and I guess we would tell people who might engage in this kind of behavior, that it may not work for you. And what we try to do is to bring together the best research findings. Our faculty engage in this kind of research. You have Kate Kinski, who along with Kathleen Hall Jamison, sort of the dean of political campaign researchers at the University of Pennsylvania, wrote a book on Obama's victory and particularly the role of the social media on that. They've really looked into this, and I think that if you go to the research, you'll find some very surprising findings.
What's the next step now for the Institute?
Well, the next step for the Institute is to go from being an open source institute with a lot of volunteers who spend enormous amounts of time creating this to a full-scale institute. And we've raised so far just under $2.5 million. We had an $800,000 investment just the other day from a national social venture philanthropist. And we're going to be able to hire an executive director and a full staff. We're located downtown right next to the Providence Service Corporation's building. In fact, the head of that company, Fletcher McClusker, has been kind enough to give us wonderful office space in a 1909 Dodge Brothers garage that's been totally redone, and it's just a magnificent space for this National Institute.
It is important, Brent Millward, to point out that the Institute will not be calling out bad behavior.
That's true. In fact, in our new newsletter that just came out today, I wrote an essay called Calling Foul. Because we get, every single day, we have people who go to our website and say, how can you not object to what this group or that group has done? And one of the things that we've done is we look at this, many of the things that are outrages, 2 days later into the news cycle, you find out it's a little different than we thought. So we run the risk of either being stupid by calling out things that really aren't outrages, or being irrelevant by calling out outrages that come about after, so far after the fact that it has no impact. And in some sense, we don't see our role as refereeing the food fight. And I think that's what you have with sort of this endless news cycle of outrage on the left, outrage on the right. And what we're doing is trying to advocate for a different form of politics. We're trying to mobilize groups that want to do that. We're working with groups like No Labels, the Bipartisan Policy Center, and many others who are really interested in sort of changing the nature of politics and making it more substantive and more meaningful, and eventually leading to a governance that is more effective than we've seen in the last few years.
Brent Millward, thank you very much for coming on the Buckmaster Show, talking about the National Institute for Civil Discourse. And Mr. Millward is the director, and he also heads the School of Government and Public Policy at the University of Arizona. Good luck to you, Brent. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you so much, Bill. Appreciate it.
Coming up now on 1217 on the Buckmaster Show. Next up, our feature. Once a month, we talk with a blogger. This time, it's a guy that calls himself the Economy Guy. We'll speak with Mr. Harvey, Tom Harvey. It'll be next on the Buckmaster Show. Stay with us.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Sierra Shutters and Sun Control is the leader in quality hardwood O'Hare brand shutters in southern Arizona. 100% customer recommended and satisfied. Sierra Shutters and Sun Control also has the highest quality blinds, shades, and state-of-the-art window tints that really make a difference in keeping your home cooler. Check out their extensive website at sierrasuncontrol.com or give them a call at 292-2212 for a free in-home estimate.
Want to lose weight? You're not alone. 2 out of 3 people in this country are now overweight. Using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, created by renowned cardiologist Dietmar Gahn, you could lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks. The program teaches proper nutrition and uses no drugs or artificial foods. Most insurance is accepted. To learn more, visit dietofhope.org or call 696-DIET.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain and Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And now open in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is a very special place, offering a continuum of health care in a resort atmosphere. Splendido received 2007 Best of 50 Plus Housing Awards from the National Association of Home Builders for overall best continuing care retirement community and interior design. Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
It's 12:21 on the Buckmaster Show, on the home of the Buckmaster Show, AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Last month here on the Buckmaster Show, we launched a new series. We call it Blogger Beat, introducing our listeners to the voice behind the blog. This month we spotlight Tom Harvey. Mr. Harvey is author of TheEconomyGuy.com, an economics website designed to educate Americans. Mr. Harvey is a retired Raytheon Director of International Marketing. And Tom, it is good to see you again. It's been a few years.
Bill, it's a great honor to be on your show today.
Thank you very much. Tell me about the Economy Guy website. And when I was introducing it, I said the Economy Guy website, and it's just Economy Guy website.
Right, economyguy.com.
How did it all start?
Well, I have a very strong belief, and that belief is that knowledge when you're investing is critically important, because more knowledge means less risk. So I needed knowledge for myself, and I talked to my friends, and much to my non-surprise, actually, most people when they're investing, like in a 401k, don't have a clue what they're investing in. They don't really understand the underlying stocks and the management teams and the profit and loss statements, etc. It takes an enormous amount of knowledge. If you have that knowledge, then you can make a great investment. That's my belief. So the purpose of the Economy Guy was to share this knowledge that I was gaining with all my friends.
Lots of news out of Europe. It's very serendipitous having you on the program today. It looks like the European Union has at least settled for now the Greek issue. What do we need to know out of this, Tom?
I think the best thing to look at is what lessons can Americans learn for what's going on in Europe. And there are several. There really are. I mean, the details in Europe are different than the details in the United States. But the first big lesson is, wow, we both started with a lot of debt. And Europe is clearly a failure with its debt. I mean, the Greek default is obviously a thing that's saying that. So, you know, how do we, what does that mean? Well, what I observe is that the United States is emulating over the last decade and more the European model, where you have a bigger central government, we have more federal employees, we have more regulations, we have, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we're moving in that direction. And the question is, why? If they're a failure, why are we moving that way? And a counter-argument to that is, wait a minute, but yeah, Greece is a problem, but what about Germany? Germany's a success, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the counter to that argument is, wait a minute, if we're moving into that model and we have a, and we don't know where we're going to end up, Greece or Germany, why in the world are we going there? Isn't that an unnecessary risk?
So you're raising some very interesting questions about the whole future of the European economic scene. Debt, is that the big problem? You write a lot about debt. Is it the big problem we face in the world in America today?
It's the cause of the problem, absolutely, and everything flows from that. The world has been, since the Second World War, has been built on debt, and it's just gotten too large. And the Europeans are now struggling with that, and they're far from over with that. I mean, people, yesterday the European leaders got together and they came out with their proposal on the solution, and it's a partial proposal, it's not complete, and then they declared success and went to dinner. So that was wonderful. Now we'll see how it plays out. In reality, there's a lot of unintended consequences which could and probably will come out of that, of their decision.
Inflation, some economists worried about future inflations. Is that going to hit America, in your opinion, Tom?
Great. Now, that's a really good question. The answer is, that's a harder question. Let me go into a little detail on inflation.
But we're quickly running out of time.
We are.
Yeah.
You want to save that
so
one?
So give me the bottom. Maybe we'll save that one, but give me a bottom line answer that one.
We're going to have slight inflation that's predicted by Ben Bernanke, and he controls it. But hyperinflation, I don't think so.
You were quoted in The Economy Guy, and there I go again saying The Economy Guy. You were quoted in economyguy.com a few weeks ago saying, buy gold with both hands. So you believe that gold is still a good investment today?
Absolutely.
Not worried about any kind of bubble or anything like that?
No. It still is. At the time that I made that recommendation, gold was below $16.50 an ounce. It's now $17.50 today. It's popped back up. Is it a bubble? Absolutely, gold is a bubble. But it's in the early stages of a bubble. People are Americans think that, see what's going around them. What Americans are doing is selling gold. They're taking their jewelry down to the local whatever and selling because the price is high. I don't blame them. Okay, but they're not buying. When people are buying gold, we're going to have a real panic to buy gold. That'll be the top of the bubble. That's where I'll sell.
You know, since the market fell so dramatically in 2008, many have asked that fundamental question, are we headed for another Great Depression? Where do you weigh in on that?
Impossible to predict is the real answer to that. It's possible. The answer to that is it's possible. Let me give you the rationale or one scenario. There's lots of scenarios that could play out. One scenario is our $70 trillion unfunded mandate from Medicare, Social Security, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's wonderful. I don't view that as a problem. The reason I don't view that as a problem is $70 trillion is huge, and we don't have that much money. So at some point, the bill will not be paid, and the problem will be solved. This is a self-correcting problem. That's kind of ironic and sarcastic way of putting it, but that's true. The real question is, when will government get its arms around this, and how will they solve the problem? If they wait too long, we will have a big catastrophe. And that could lead to a Great Depression.
You see the stock market ending in positive territory for the year, Harvey?
Probably, yes, I do.
Another quick question.
Without another shock to the system.
Another quick question about the euro versus the dollar. Throughout this process of what's been going on in Germany with Greece, the euro remains very strong. I think it's over 140 today.
Mm-hmm.
Do you foresee more strength in the euro, or do you think it's going to be leveling off at about 140?
I see both the United States and Europe inflating their currency, so it's going to be a race to the bottom. I think that I guess the real answer is I don't know which way it's going to go. I read a lot of economists, and the general consensus is that the dollar will strengthen slightly against the euro in the future for the rest of the year.
Okay, Tom Harvey, economyguy.com, and you love to get feedback, I'm sure, from your fellow folks listening and reading the blog from all over the world, right?
That's right.
All right. Tom Harvey, thanks a lot for being on the Buckmaster Show. Coming up now on 12:30 on the Buckmaster Show, we will be talking. Our CEO interview series presented by Trio is coming up next on the Buckmaster Show, so stay with us.
With SRN News, I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. The deal that was agreed to by European leaders to help keep the continent's debt crisis from spreading is just what Wall Street wanted to hear. Stocks have been following the lead of markets around the world today, with the Dow up by more than 300 points in afternoon trading. A federal judge in North Carolina is clearing the way for the trial of John Edwards to begin next year. The judge rejected an effort by Edwards' lawyers to get the criminal charges dismissed. Edwards is charged with using campaign money to cover up an affair during his unsuccessful White House run and then filing false campaign finance reports. After 4 months in jail, a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen who was arrested in Egypt as a suspected spy is now free. Ilan Grappel was released in a prisoner swap that has since eased friction between Israel and Egypt. More details at srnnews.com.
The Arizona sun is intense regardless of the season. That's why you need Sierra Shutters and Sun Control, Southern Arizona's custom shutter specialist and proud supplier of O'Hare Shutters, locally manufactured blinds and state-of-the-art window tints. Our power bills are less after installing Sierra's 100% hardwood shutters and window tints in our home. Call Sierra Shutters and Sun Control 292-2212 or check out their extensive website, sierrasuncontrol.com.
With 2 out of 3 people in this country overweight, you're not alone in wanting to shed some pounds. Now you can lose 5 to 15% of your body weight in just 6 weeks using Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope. The physician-supervised program created by renowned Tucson cardiologist Dietmar Gahn and certified nutrition counselor Elizabeth Gahn. To learn more about Dr. Gahn's Diet of Hope, call 696-DIET or log on to dietofhope.org.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh, homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore. Casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson on North Swan at Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. And now in Oro Valley, Noble Hops, the Tucson area's first gastro pub.
Splendido at Rancho Vistoso in Oro Valley is one of Southern Arizona's crown jewels. You will find that the services and amenities offered at Splendido rival those of a fine resort. But what sets Splendido apart is a continuum of health care that allows for a full life today, knowing tomorrow is secure. As a true continuing care retirement community, Splendido offers priority access to on-site assisted living, skilled nursing, and memory support care if ever needed. Find out more at SplendidoAZ.net.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
It's 12:34 on the Buckmaster Show. Every few weeks here on the Buckmaster Show, we introduce you to a leader of one of Tucson's largest companies and organizations. The CEO interview series on the Buckmaster Show is presented by Trio, offering programs and services to support the attraction and expansion of companies that offer primary high-wage jobs to our citizens. Since 2005, Trio has facilitated the relocation and or expansion of more than 40 companies in the Tucson region, representing nearly 11,000 jobs and a $2 billion economic impact. For more information, visit trioaz.org. Today, we spotlight Wendell Long. Mr. Long is the chief executive officer of the Passwayaki Gaming Enterprises, a tribal member of the Great Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Mr. Long oversees Casino del Sol, Casino of the Sun, and the Ava Amphitheater. Casino del Sol is in the midst of a huge expansion project. It's a $120 million project that we will be talking with him right off the bat about. Mr. Long, Wendell, good to see you.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate coming, and I appreciate the compliment of calling me a leader. So I don't know how true that is.
But. I mean, you're a leader of this community, and you've got a huge economic program going on with this expansion project. Tell us what's involved here. I know there's a luxury hotel and some other amenities.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the first thing is, hearing your intro of me, is we're going from Casino del Sol to Casino del Sol Resort. And that really summarizes the whole, the whole expansion. We're going from just a casino with some great food outlets to a full-scale resort. The expansions that we're doing, we're adding a hotel, a 215-room hotel, with the top two floors are highly appointed suites, 10 suites with little Romeo-Juliet balconies going out, just gorgeous. Strong four-star amenities there, but for a three-star price. Down in the, in addition to the hotel, we're adding a Prima Lounge, a high-end lobby bar, place where you go to get premium crafted drinks, enjoy some fine cheeses, and just relax. Great ambiance, and attached to the hotel is probably the nicest pool area in all of Arizona. We can have events up to 2,500 people out there. Simply gorgeous out there. Have palm trees actually in the swimming pool. We have fountains.
Really? There are palm trees in the pool?
Yeah.
Swim up to your favorite palm tree, right?
Have fountains that go across.
So you obviously looked at the market before making this decision, because this is a huge investment, and felt that the outlook for tourism looked real good here.
Oh, absolutely. And we're not, it is our goal, we don't want to take any business from any of the other resorts in Tucson. We want to grow the market. We want people to come in from outside of Tucson. We want to be able to help everyone. We already have in excess of $2 million in bookings already, and some of it actually international.
How about jobs created with this program?
The total number of additional jobs on this will be around 300 jobs. We had 500 construction jobs also, and 300 permanent jobs. And as you know, this is what we really need in Tucson. And putting my chairman of the board of the Chamber of Commerce, as well as Chairman Circle of Trio, hat on, Tucson needs jobs. Tucson needs to be pro-business. So, jobs are just so important for this. And, of course, those jobs are multiplied. We figure it's probably an impact of 1,000 permanent jobs in Tucson, with all the heavy support from the vendors and our buy local initiatives.
And the grand opening is coming up right next month.
11-11-11. So it is going to be the biggest party that Tucson has seen in ages. We're going to have the actual opening ceremonies are going to be at 5 o'clock out by the pool area, so you can see that beautiful new pool area. Followed by the largest fireworks show that Tucson has ever seen. After that, we're going to have on the first night, it's going to be a Latin concert with Alejandro Guzman, Intocable, and Pepe Aguilar, followed by and that's in our 5,000-seat amphitheater, Ava. followed by a totally free event in what is the largest ballroom in Tucson, and that's going to be by a variety of the top Tejano artists. The next day is when we have Tim McGraw in AVA, and followed by a totally free concert in the conference center by Cheap Trick.
Sounds like you've got going to have a huge crowd coming out for that event. I want to talk a little bit with you about these latest gaming revenue numbers. The gaming revenue looks like it, the tribes took in nearly $1.7 billion, according to the Arizona Department of Gaming, but that is, well, it's a little bit of an increase over the prior year, but it's still about 15% below the peak of a few years ago.
And Bill, you know, let me give you, you know, before we start on that, you know, I mean, $1.7 billion is a big number, but that is gross receipts from gaming. As you can tell, with 1,200 employees and huge facilities, very expensive to run it. So that's, you know, the amount of profits the tribes make is a small, small portion of this. And the majority of that $1.7 billion is up in the Phoenix area anyway. So I wish we could say we were doing that well, but we're not. You see a small increase. I think a lot of that is due to the fact that the Casino Arizona Talking Stick has opened a new hotel. Gila Rivers Hotel is just getting up to speed after being open 2 years. So, you know, I don't see it really as a growth in the market, but just, you know, a growth due to those hotels. What we're seeing in Tucson is, you know, we're seeing revenues being fairly stagnant. We are seeing a lot more guests coming to our property, which is very, very hopeful because they enjoy our property, they think, but they don't have the money to spend. Our spend per guest is down. But we're obviously happy with our business. We want to provide a great product for them, and like you, I just can't wait for this economy to come back. I remember 3 years ago talking to Tribal Council about, you know, when the economy went south and, you know, we're not sure what's going to happen and all that. I never in my wildest dreams thought that 3 years later we'd still be kind of stuck in these doldrums.
Overall, how is Indian gaming doing across the country? Some properties doing, I would assume, much better than others. Some just kind of hanging in there.
Indian gaming as a whole is doing very, very well. It's pretty much the same as us and same as the state. It's basically flat. We do rely on discretionary income. I mean, if you have a choice between gambling or feeding your family, we hope you choose feeding your family.
Let's hope so. Yeah.
So it's fairly flat. What's really helped Indian gaming, though, is the vast, vast, vast majority of the tribes are very debt adverse, so they don't have those. You know, they paid for most of their buildings in cash or very frugal financing. So they don't have the problems that the Las Vegas casinos did that were highly leveraged and had to make the big, you know, bond payments.
Wendell Long is with us. He's the chief executive officer of the Pascualiaki Gaming Enterprises. This is the CEO series presented by Trio. Overall, when you look at the situation with economic development, you are in the Trio's chairman circle. I think you're the chair, right?
I'm the chair of the chamber.
Chamber, okay. But you are in the Trio chairman's circle. How do you look at the economy right now? Are we starting to come back in Tucson? You're giving me a big smile there.
I wish I could say yes. I mean,
have we hit a bottom of some kind?
I think we've definitely hit a bottom. I think we definitely know where we're going. I think the only direction to go is up. It still concerns me, you know, all the people that don't have jobs. We need to find jobs. We need help from the city and county, you know, to make it easier for businesses to succeed in here. It's not my business that's going to bring back the economy. It's not the big businesses, the Raytheon. See, it's going to be these little mom and pops that are just struggling there. They're the ones where all the job creation is going to be. And we, you know, we, the city, the chambers, Trio, I mean, we have to have a much friendlier atmosphere here. We have to get where these people can create the jobs, put people to work. And those people that are working at the mom-and-pop things, the Tucson Appliance Centers, those are the people that can then come to my place and gamble or stay in my hotel or buy a car from Jim Click. That's the key to everything. It helps all of us, and it all allows me to hire more employees, and then the cycle just goes on and on and on.
Wendell Long, thank you very much for being with us, Chief Executive Officer of the Paswayaki Gaming Enterprises. That big event is coming up 11-11-11. That's easy to remember, right? That's
yes,
gonna
sir.
Be a huge event, and that will be open to everyone. I'm sure all of our Buckmaster Show listeners who listen to this program throughout Southern Arizona will be very interested in seeing this new property that you're unveiling. Good luck to you, Wendell Long.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Wendell Long, the Chief Executive Officer of the Paswayaki Gaming Enterprises, and he is our spotlight on the Trio CEO interview series. Coming up on 12:45 on the Buckmaster Show, we'll be talking about some really interesting, and actually it's fascinating research about breast cancer. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. This is the Buckmaster Show on KVOI, The Voice. Stay with us.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowland Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Since 1959, Assistance League of Tucson has helped thousands of disadvantaged men, women, and children in the Tucson area. Donated items, thrift shop proceeds, volunteer hours, and financial gifts help support our philanthropic programs like Operation School Bell. Your generosity continues to change lives in our community. For more information on how you, too, can make a difference, visit us at AssistanceLeagueTucson.org. Assistance League of Tucson, volunteers working together.
There are times when you save, and there are times when you
save big.
Whoa! Take vehicle loans, for instance. Any time of the year, Pyramid Federal Credit Union can help you save with lower rates. But now, for a limited time, we're helping you
save big.
That means rates as low as 4.5% APR when you buy or refinance a vehicle loan. Plus terms up to 60 months, whether it's new or used. You won't just save. You'll
save big.
That never gets old. Stop by any Pyramid Federal Credit Union or visit us at pyramidfcu.com to learn more. That's 4.5% APR vehicle loans for a limited time. Plus save another 0.25% with payment options.
That's huge.
Pyramid Federal Credit Union. Improve your financial life. Learn more at pyramidfcu.com. 4.5% APR on vehicle loans for a limited time. Restrictions may apply. Membership eligibility required. NCUA insured.
A simple solution to foot and lower back problems could be a top-quality, custom-made foot orthotic created by Bob Novak. A certified pet orthist, Bob is the best in Southern Arizona in the creation of the right foot support that your body needs and at a price you can afford. Please give Bob Novak a call, 795-2553, or visit him at Arizona Limb and Brace, Rosemont and Fifth Street. Your feet will thank you every day.
Well, 12:48 on the Buckmaster Show. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. More than ever before, women are surviving breast cancer. In fact, since 1990, breast cancer death rates in the United States have dropped steadily. Today, the five-year survival rate for women with cancer that hasn't spread beyond the breast is 98%, and that is good news. Next up on the Buckmaster Show is Dr. Ed Starin, CEO of the Cancer Treatment Centers of America at the Western Regional Medical Center in Phoenix. Dr. Starin's latest research on quality of life and breast cancer is attracting national interest. His study was just published in Breast Journal. Dr. Starin, thanks for being on the Buckmaster Show.
It's a pleasure, Buck.
Tell me a bit about your study. What were you trying to attempt to disclose, and what did the study show?
Happy to do so. Patients that have cancer of any type, and breast cancer particularly, are interested in a number of things, three things especially, and that, of course, includes survival. Are they going to be cured? Second of all, they're interested in recurrence. Is the tumor going to come back? And third, they're interested in quality of life. What does all this mean to me? What type of effects will the cancer have directly, and what effects will the treatment have on me? Quality of life has a number of important parameters. Some of them are obvious that we think about a person's ability to engage in normal functions, their job, their habits and hobbies. But it can be a reflection of their nutritional status, their psychosocial feelings, how comfortable they are with themselves, what their ability to be able to engage in rehabilitation and therefore get back to normal activities are all part of the quality of life measure.
When you look at quality of life, is this something that has not been explored or researched enough, Dr. Starin, in your opinion?
I don't think so. Most studies end up focusing on things such as survival and recurrence. And quality of life is critical, as you mentioned. The good news about our ability to treat cancer these days is that we are, in fact, curing the majority of patients with cancer. That's a very hopeful message. But if a person does have a cure, does have the ability to have a cancer converted into more of a chronic disease, if you will, their quality of life is going to be critically important. There are a number of ways of measuring that quality of life, and we, in this study that was involving 1,500 patients over 7 years, utilized an instrument called the EORTC. It's from the European Organization of Research, and it's a widely accepted measure to assess quality of life. In doing so, we found a number of interesting things.
Now, like what?
Well, patients that end up having quality of life, it's an important ability to predict aspects beyond specific to the quality of life. In other words, if a person comes in with a diagnosis of cancer and they end up having a decrease in their function, their ability to engage in their hobbies or to return to work, unfortunately, that actually predicted for less survival. So that has important implications. In other words, if someone comes in with that kind of dysfunction, you may want to pay a different kind of attention to that patient, and perhaps that will have implications on the treatment that may be recommended. The other side of the coin is that what is the quality of life during the course of treatment? If a person is 2 months, 4 months, 6 months out from their treatment, depending on what level they may be at on a quality of life function, in other words, is their nutritional state down? Is their rehabilitation function down? What's their psychosocial status? Are they depressed? It's important to address those concerns. If a person ends up having a poor nutritional state, you want to make sure that they are re-nourished, optimally nourished, so that they can tolerate the therapies that you're providing. If they tolerate the therapy better, that can translate into improved opportunities for survival, improved opportunities for decreasing the recurrence of the tumor.
Many people choose to live in Tucson, as you know, Dr. Starin. I believe you're a former Wildcat.
I am.
And they choose to live here because of the high quality of life. What does that mean specifically to someone battling cancer to be actually residing in a place that's a pleasant place to live in?
Well, I think it's important to know what your options are. And one of the things that we pride ourselves on at Cancer Treatment Centers of America is providing an environment of whole person care, recognizing that we treat the mind, the body, and the spirit. Addressing issues of quality of life, it approaches exactly that. It's not just the technology. It's not simply the medicines or the radiation or the surgery. It's important to address all aspects that are important to a patient, and that includes the things about which you just spoke. at CTCA, or Cancer Treatment Centers of America, we would want patients in Tucson to know that we're an option to help them fight their cancer. If they want to fight the cancer, we're there to fight with them. And for those of them that may be interested in learning more about that whole person treatment, that ability to address both the mind, the body, and the spirit, I'd encourage them to go to our website at cancercenter.com.
There's a lot of concern and questions about mammograms. I think that the experts agree on the value of the mammogram, but they disagree on some of the details. Where do you come down on that, Dr. Starin?
Well, I do believe that it's been clearly shown that in substantial numbers of patients, the ability to have a screening mammogram can improve the overall survival of patients. The data is very clear on patients over the age of 50. Very little question that in that patient population that having a mammogram on an annual basis can improve a woman's chance for survival. Where it starts to fall down some is in younger women that end up having very dense breasts, and it's unclear where the advantages will fall in the mammogram. The good news is that what we found is that having certain types of mammograms, now the digital mammograms that will enhance the image, particularly in the women that are younger with dense breasts, that can augment the ability to be able to identify a lesion at an earlier point.
What about the frequency of a mammogram?
It's still recommended over the age of 40 on an annual basis. And in women that may end up having a stronger family history and or a questionable lesion, then would be appropriate to do so prior to age 40.
You know, one fact that gets lost in the mix, that most, from what I understand, most breast biopsies come back negative for cancer 4 out of 5 times. I think that's a fact that gets pushed aside and really should be in the forefront.
It's an important statistic to know, and it's one of the reasons why I enthusiastically recommend when biopsies are done that they're done as needle biopsies. In the past, biopsies were done as open breast procedures. An incision was made on the breast, and a considerable portion of breast tissue was removed, and as you said, only to find in 80% of the cases that it was benign. With a needle biopsy that can often be done with an image guidance, such as a mammogram or an ultrasound, a small needle can be inserted into the area of question, and that area can be numbed up, so it's a relatively painless procedure. That very small piece of tissue to a pathologist looks like a lot of tissue, and they can make an extremely accurate diagnosis and avoid women having an unnecessary open procedure.
The whole person treatment model that you talked about, that Cancer Treatment Centers of America is really, I think that's one of their mission statements. Do you find that the person that comes there has a feeling that it's a more hopeful place to be generally?
I don't think there's any question about that. In fact, hope is one of the key values that our whole organization is founded on. Patients that come here are often seeking options that they've not been offered at other sites. We try to identify what is of value to the patient, listen to the patient, and provide that whenever possible. We refer to that as patient empowerment medicine. In other words, if you provide information to a patient in terms they understand, then that restores some control to the patient, which often, unfortunately, cancer takes away. By being empowered, by having that information that they understand, they can help make a rational decision as far as their overall management, and that's key.
Self-awareness, self-exam is still very important for women, Dr. Starin?
Very much. It is still true that the majority of breast lesions will be identified by the patient in detecting a mass. That having been said, the best chance for cure specific to breast cancer is identifying a lesion at the earliest point, and it is still true that that earliest point will much more often be identified by virtue of mammogram. So getting back to your earlier question, it is one of the reasons why I certainly am a proponent for screening mammograms so as to identify breast lesions at the earliest possible time.
What's the takeaway message for this October and this Breast Cancer Awareness Month as far as you're concerned, Dr. Starin?
I think you brought it right up front when you said the word hope. I believe that it's important for women to know that today the majority of patients with a diagnosis of breast cancer can and will be cured. It is important, whenever possible, to identify the cancer at an early point. So I would encourage them to seek the identification routinely with examinations by their physician, to have their mammograms on a regular basis. And should something be identified, don't ignore it. Bring it to the attention of the healthcare professional so that you give yourself the best chance for cure.
Dr. Ed Starin, very good information. Thank you very much for being on the Buckmaster Show.
It's been a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Dr. Ed Starin, CEO of Cancer Treatment Centers of America at the Western Regional Medical Center. Dr. Starin talking about breast cancer and October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you in part by Flowers, Rieger & Associates Certified Public Accountants, 2919 East Broadway, and on the web at flowersrieger.com. I want to tell you about tomorrow's show. The Friday Focus interview will be with the head of the Community Water Company in Green Valley. I will be questioning him along with Dan Scheer of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Then our Reporters Roundtable, Dan and Sarah Garrett-Gasson of the Arizona Daily Star join me to talk about the top stories of the week. That's Friday, tomorrow, noon to 1 on the Buckmaster Show. Have a great afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow.
KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. 930 KAPR Douglas. And 1240 KJAA Globe, the Voice Radio Network.